Hello and welcome to a new season of Inside Education, the programme that brings you the best from the world of education from an Irish perspective. You're welcome to contact the programme via Twitter at InsideEd or through email insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. You can access over 260 podcasts of previous programmes on seandelaney.com/podcasts. The Literacy Association of Ireland, the LAI, held its 40th annual conference last weekend in the Merino Institute of Education. And one of the keynote speakers at it was Professor Jackie Marsh from the University of Sheffield. Jackie Marsh has conducted research into children's access to digital technologies and their development of literacy skills. Her keynote presentation was titled, I Write, I Read, I Play: Children's Digital Literacy Practices Using Tablets at Home and School. I met up with Jackie Marsh the day after her presentation and I spoke to her about digital literacies. I'm bringing you my interview with her this week on the programme, and I began by asking Jackie Marsh what digital literacy skills are.
Well, that's a million-dollar question for a number of reasons. First is that digital literacy is defined very differently by different groups of people. And so, for example, you've got people who think it's all about the technical skills. It's about being able to turn on a computer or a tablet and manage the technical aspects of that. For people like myself, it's much more about meaning-making and text production, text analysis, mediated through digital technologies. And the kinds of skills children need for that are many and varied. Let's take, for example, reading. So reading, you know, traditional texts, a child needs to be able to decode alphabetic print, encode it, bring their knowledge of the life to the text in comprehending it and so on. Children still need all those skills when they're looking at text on the screen, but they also need other kinds of skills. When you look at a website, you need to think, well, it doesn't go from left to right. Does it need radial reading? Where do I begin? You know, what does that link mean in terms of anticipating what the next page might bring them? So it's a very different set of skills to a more traditional literacy skills, but they are intertwined. And that's one of the key messages I think that we need to convey, is that when we're talking about digital literacy, it's not as if we're saying leave traditional print-based practices behind, you don't need them anymore. You very much do. They very much have to be at the core of children's digital literacy practices.
So what's the extra then, if it's a little bit more than what they already needed to know in terms of conventional literacy, if that's an acceptable term?
The extra really is, I suppose, in the expanded modes that children have to engage with on screen. So, you know, in picture books, obviously, they've got pictures and text. But with through screens, they're often sort of moving images, there's sound and so on. So children have to engage with a much wider range of modes, and they have to understand what is distinctive about those modes, what Gunter Kress calls, what are the affordances of those modes? What will the modes let them do and will not let them do? So that when children are creating a multimodal text, they know when it's best to use text, when it's best to use images and so on. So it's an expanded repertoire of skills that children need in a digital climate.
So when people start learning to read, there's a lot of emphasis, say, on decoding text. So well, you're not exactly decoding pictures or decoding videos. How do you talk about what you're doing when you encounter an image or a video online?
Well, in some ways you are decoding. There is a code there that you've got to understand. You've got to be able to deconstruct that text, enable to understand and respond to it. So it's interesting that, you know, in some curricula, they'll actually use the term reading to apply to both reading of multimodal texts and to more traditional print-based texts. But of course, the skills required are, you know, quite different. So if we look at video, for example, or watching film, there are lots of things there about mood and the mise-en-scene that, you know, that that children have to be able to understand and bring from their own knowledge and experience of viewing films. So it's a different set of skills, and I think that what we need to see is that we need to see the complexity of this in relation to the types of text that we offer children, and think about what repertoire of skills, what orchestration of skills might they need for that particular text making and practice, and how might we support them in that. So I do think the challenge of teaching is greater than perhaps it ever has been for previous generations. Because, you know, it was hard enough when I was a teacher, you know, many years ago, teaching children to read and write alphabetic print. But now that has to be contextualised, you know, amongst so many other modes. And that's very, very challenging for teachers, but also can be very creative and very enjoyable.
For those of us, Jackie, who didn't grow up with digital media, we learned to read and we acquired our literacy in a conventional way or using conventional text. But still, when the digital media came along, we survived. We managed to be able to read them. So are they less challenging, the new aspects of text, than the original, the conventional decoding and understanding and comprehension of text?
Well, that's an interesting question. I mean, in terms of, you know, what's easier, what's not, what's challenging for one person might not be for another. Obviously, you know, written language is very complex in terms of the skills children have to bring to understand symbols and their codes. And that is very, very different from looking at an image and seeing what that represents. Whether one's easier or not, I wouldn't like to say. If you read Roland Barthes on unpacking an image and what, you know, how we might read photographic images, one would say, no, it's just as complex as reading written text. So I think it all depends on the individual and their own understandings of that. And when you say that, you know, many of us were born in the pre-digital era, and yet we've managed to, you know, make that transitions quite easily. For some, that hasn't been so easy. So we have got, you know, many surveys show there is still a disenfranchised group of our older citizens, you know, who are not making that transition into the online world that easily. And I think we're so focused on, you know, the younger end, we need to think about that older group and, you know, what help do they need to be able to function effectively in an online world.
See, I suppose what I'm wondering as well is, are people like me maybe missing out on things in images and in videos that if we had stronger digital literacy skills, we'd actually be able to see and to pick up from those images?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that if you look at some of the work that, well, for example, the British Film Institute has done, where they've worked with teachers about helping children to read film and read the code of film, very much I think that teachers have found that very valuable because, you know, they didn't have an understanding perhaps of, you know, how you might read a producer's intention in relation to setting up a scene. They might have missed, for example, the role of music in film, or even silence. You know, those things that you might take for granted as a film viewer yourself, when you begin to unpack those, they obviously have, you know, very important meanings. So I think the kinds of support that people like, that, you know, institutions like British Film Institute provide for teachers can be very effective in helping us to, you know, to address those gaps in knowledge.
What would a digital literacy lesson look like in a classroom?
Very varied. Just as if you'd asked me, what does a literacy lesson look like? I'd have to say, well, it would just depend on what you're focusing on that day, because there are so many different elements of digital literacy. And in any one day, you would go in and see different kinds of things. I would hope that what you wouldn't see is some of the practices that perhaps have been described by Colin Lankshear as old wine in new bottles, which is, you know, taking very didactic pedagogical practices such as, I don't know, decoding a word, you know, those phonics games, very quite dry and boring phonics games, and just transposing those into a digital environment. I'm not saying those kinds of practices aren't important, they are, but I think it's the way that you do it, and we might do that in a way that uses the best of the affordances of the technology rather than just replicating what was in print. Rather, in a really interesting and exciting digital literacy lesson, you might see the children having agency in the kinds of text that they want to produce. So being able to choose from a range of modes and media, being able to experiment and be playful. You don't need a lot of technology to do some interesting things. So I've seen some wonderful work where children have just been given a very simple camera, got on a walk around the neighbourhood, brought that back, put that together as a slideshow in PowerPoint with music and so on, adding hyperlinks and, you know, making a very effective text from just one piece of technology. To the more extreme end, where children might be filming, editing films, adding sound, soundtrack to their film, and so on. So it's a continuum, I think. And if teachers are not expert in this area, I would say by just start by experimenting with the technology that you're comfortable with. So if you've got a smartphone and you're happy with your own smartphone and your own use of it, maybe just try that with children, you know, taking photographs, making music, some of those simple activities. Also, the other thing I would say is sometimes let the children lead the learning, because often, not always, but often they are more familiar with some technologies than we are. And if you let them, bring them into the classroom and teach other children around those, and they might actually end up teaching you things that you weren't familiar with.
And you would definitely, I presume, envisage the children using maybe tablets or laptops or reading on computers?
Oh, absolutely, yes. I mean, where a school can invest, I would say most definitely tablets. Obviously, you know, PCs offer different things, but I think if you can only invest in a few pieces of technology, then tablets are very good, because they embody lots of different kinds of practices in one media. You know, a lot of things are converged in the tablet, so they can use apps, play games on the apps, they can create stories and so on, they can use the camera for the kinds of production that I talked about earlier. So I think that, you know, if you were able to invest in any one thing, for me, I would be advocating tablets. And we've seen some really inventive and innovative uses of tablets in infant and primary classrooms.
Are there particular things that parents or carers or other family members can do to help support young children's engagement with media and technologies?
Yeah, there are lots of ways that parents can and do support their children. So I think when children take an early interest, as they do, in their parents' phones and laptops, then, you know, talking to children about the kinds of things that they like to do on there, doing things alongside their child. So if your child wants to go on a website, CBeebies website is a very popular one in England, then playing along with your child and talking to him or her about the kinds of things that they're doing is obviously very beneficial. As we know, all of the research says the more parents are involved in scaffolding children's learning, the better. That's not to say that parents will always have the time to do that. Children will have opportunities to spend time on their own with media. And at that point, I think it's about parents just being aware of what their children are doing and being able to watch over them on a tablet or app. We conducted a European study where we found that many parents were saying, I don't worry too much about my children's access to the internet or supervise that because they're too young. And when we observed the children, they were very quick to go on the internet, and they knew how to get there.
At what age?
From age three upwards, because they were able to look at the icon and recognize the icon. You know, we talk about logographic skills, and they were certainly able to identify the logo for YouTube. I think don't underestimate children's capacity, and always sort of be aware and looking at what children are doing. So if you're not able to sort of directly engage with them, then at least sort of oversight of it. And one of the things that, you know, talk to parents a lot about is being a good role model with uses of technology, you know, so not ignoring your child as he or she asks questions because you're so busy reading your own text messages and so on, and you're ignoring that human interaction. That's actually not a good role model for your children, because then they'll be very quickly pick up that the technology is more important than talking to someone else. So it's about a role model as well. So it's a wide repertoire of things, I think, that parents can do. And we found that in all our families, families from all different walks of life and different economic backgrounds, they all want the best for the children, and they all want the children to be confident in a digital world. And I think it's incumbent upon teachers to support them in that and give them guidance. Just to give you an example of that, so we just conducted a project of under fives use of apps, and many parents said that they just weren't sure of where to go for apps. They tended to download them just by searching in an ad hoc fashion online for them, or they'd follow in-app adverts. And none of these ways of finding apps are productive, I think, for finding apps that are really good for children's early learning. So I would say if teachers could be familiar with just a few apps that then they could promote to parents, so that parents have an opportunity, just as parents might teachers might talk to parents about picture books that they think that their parents would particularly enjoy with children. They could perhaps, you know, introduce them to a small number of apps in the same way.
And for teachers who aren't familiar with apps. Where can they find out more, and are there any you'd recommend in particular?
You know, we're beginning to see more in this area now, more guidance and advice. National Literacy Trust is a UK-based organisation that have recently developed some guidance for teachers and parents on choosing apps. There's an American site called Common Sense Media, which reviews apps. It's an American site, but many of the apps that we would find in Ireland and the UK also, and they grade them and review them, and they have educators looking at the apps, so teachers can trust that it's another teacher that has been part of reviewing that app. So I would definitely recommend Common Sense Media. And then as part of our last project, we set up a website, www.techandplay.org, and on there we have booklets for parents and teachers which talk about some of the ways in which you might make a judgment about apps in terms of reviewing them for the appropriateness for use with young children.
Okay, that's really helpful, and I'll put links to those on the program's website as well. And in terms of how teachers are responding innovatively to the use of technology, have you seen any examples that have struck you in particular?
There are some wonderful classrooms where teachers are grasping the potential of technology. I've worked a lot with Montini Primary School in Sheffield. And recently they've been doing really interesting things with augmented reality apps like Orasma and QR codes. These enable them to link children's written productions with video and oral work. So, for example, their children made comics and then they videoed the children talking about their comics or retelling the stories. And then through the use of QR codes or the Orasma app, you're able to stick something on the written text. And when the parent points the smartphone at that icon, it takes them onto the online space where they can find their children's video. Or it might be a song or music or whatever. And so they had parents' evenings where you could see parents going around with their smartphones. You know, so I think these kinds of ways of linking online and offline, very innovative, very motivating for children, and obviously very good way of linking oracy with writing and reading.
And where does television fall in your suite of technologies that are available to children and in which they must learn how to be literate?
Yeah, television's still very important. One might imagine that maybe television has become less important.
And I wondered, was it too passive?
Well, that's an interesting question. It's often characterised as passive television, but we found in, particularly with young children, that that's not the case at all. So we've done studies where we've watched children watching their favourite television programmes, and they're often talking to the characters, replaying parts of the story, getting toys that relate to the story and playing out scenarios, singing, dancing, moving. So, you know, relatively not passive, in fact, when they're watching television. And then when they do seem more passive, actually, what does that mean? How do we know what's going on cognitively? And how do we understand that? There's no doubt that sometimes children watch TV to unwind, don't we all? As adults, we do the same thing. But many of the programmes now for young children are very high quality. They're often developed with informed guidance by early educational specialists. And so the kinds of cognitive development that will come from those television programmes is actually, you know, quite impressive. I mean, we saw that with Sesame Street, of course. There's a lot of research which shows things like Sesame Street promoted a whole range of like phonological awareness, phonemic awareness of children and so on. But we're finding that now with many of the newer programmes. So I certainly think that television is an important medium for young children. And it's not become less important in this digital world, but the way that they're watching it is certainly changing. For older children, for young children, they're still watching live television at a scheduled time, because often that's a way of parents signalling this is the time from after tea to bedtime. But for older children, they, you know, they're watching it on an iPlayer and catch up. They're watching it at times that suit them, their favourite programmes. So scheduling, you know, less important for those children.
And does it do anything to their attention span? You know, the way if an image is constantly changing, does that train children to expect more stimulation in life in general?
An interesting question, and my research hasn't addressed that. And I haven't found any convincing research, I would say, that media has a detrimental effect on attention span. There was a study that was widely cited in America that, you know, that there was a link between television viewing and attention deficit disorder. But when you looked at the methodology of that study, it was actually quite questionable. So basically what they did was ask parents to estimate, you know, the amount of time their children spend. And of course, you know, it's not reliable asking children, asking parents to estimate time in that way. What you need are longitudinal studies that really observe children in situ. So I'm not convinced that there is the convincing evidence out there. Having said that, you know, I don't think we can then say that there are no detrimental effects to technology. We know that, like everything, there will be both benefits and there will be disbenefits. We have to be careful about mediating children's use of technology effectively.
And have you found any downsides in your research so far?
No, I've conducted many studies now of children's use, and in all those studies there is definitely a small number of children, small percentage of children that you would say overuse media. So, you know, for young children, they're watching it more than 4 or 5 hours a day. It's actually quite passive use often, rather than engaging in sort of more productive uses, such as playing games or creating stories and so on. And I think that it's important to get the message across to parents about moderating their children's use. If they find they're using it too much, then turn it off.
And where is the threshold for too much?
That's very much about individual parents deciding that within the family context. There was a sort of blanket rule that, you know, more than 2 hours for young children was not very good. And in fact, the American Association of Paediatricians said no screens at all for under twos. But they've recently reviewed that because they realise in this digital world, we can't screen out screens in that way. And so I would say, rather than the message coming out really now from all of the experts in this area, is rather than just think about it in terms of how much time your child spends with media, think about it in terms of the quality of that use. So make sure that your children has an opportunity to have a rich diet of media use and not just overusing, you know, one type of media. If they're playing games all the time, then try to get them into some other, you know, more creative. Not saying that games aren't creative, but, you know, things like creating stories and so on. So it's very much, I think, up to parents to make that judgment. I think, you know, if you find that your child is getting distressed when you're telling them to turn off a tablet or something, and they don't seem to be able to settle down afterwards, and that's a signal to you that perhaps your child is becoming over dependent and does need distracting in other ways. And it's about putting in rituals and practices, everyday practices, that define those limits for children until they become self-regulating.
We've partly touched on the transfer of conventional literacy to digital literacy. How well does the transfer of literacy skills work from digital literacy to conventional literacy?
And that's a very interesting question, and I don't think we've got, you know, sufficient research in that area. They are very, very different skills, and I'm not sure that really what we'd be tracing would be similar in that way. So for example, if we're thinking about, you know, reading on screen and reading on print, tracing backwards, there are many, you know, very similar processes that that take place. So children being able to link the phoneme to the grapheme and so on. But yet there are sort of quite, as I said earlier, you know, quite different skills taking place on the screen that you wouldn't find that replicated in a traditional context. So generally, when children meet print on paper, it is in a certain direction. In English, it's left to right. In Arabic, right to left. On screen, it's very different. You know, you might read a screen from top to bottom, from right side to left side, or vice versa. And so, I don't think it's, you know, the kinds of skills that you might meet in a digital environment trace backwards in that way to more traditional literacy practices. But I would say skills, you know, more generic skills such as meaning making, such as understanding texts, bringing your understanding of life to a text or taking from a text and embedding that within your understanding of your own social and cultural context. Those are the kinds of skills that you can learn in a digital environment that you could very easily take to a picture book as you're reading a picture book, for example.
Yeah. Jackie, can you say a little bit about how you go about conducting your own research?
Yeah, so I've undertaken a number of studies of young children's use of technology in homes and schools, and I've used a wide variety of methods. I've often used surveys of parents just to get the bigger picture about what parents think about certain things in relation to their child's use of technologies, but used observation as a primary method, and extended observations in homes, a more ethnographic approach, in schools, observations, and sometimes where we might diagnose what a child is doing against a classified set of variables that we've set up before the study. Some of the more interesting work, I have to say, some of the more interesting data that we've had have come out of our perhaps more innovative methods. So in our last study, we actually asked children to use GoPro cameras that they strapped to a chest cam as they were using tablets. And that's something that we hadn't used before. But that gave us fascinating data into the child's bird's eye view almost as they're using tablets of what was happening, you know, in that area. So I think you have to be open to using a wide range of methods in this area because we need to look at very many, you know, different facets. And so I'm not aligned to any one particular tradition. I use both quantitative and qualitative approaches. But I think, you know, for me, the core practice is about engaging parents, teachers and children as co-researchers in the activity. So we've had a number of studies, for example, where parents have worked alongside us capturing their children's digital literacy practices on their own phones and smartphones, sending that to us. And then when we visit the family next time, we'll discuss that. Because I think through those kinds of practices, you can really begin to understand what kinds of things the children privilege and the parents privilege and where they might overlap and where they might diverge.
And that was Jackie Marsh describing how she conducts her research into children's literacy. She was in Ireland last weekend as a guest of the Literacy Association of Ireland. I'll put links to the resources mentioned by Jackie in the website notes for the programme. I want to thank Jackie for her time and to the Literacy Association of Ireland and Dr. Jean Wiegand for their help in setting up the interview. If you'd like to feature an idea or an event on a future programme, you can write to insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. You can listen to podcasts of all previous programmes on seandelaney.com/podcasts. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney saying goodbye. Thank you for listening.